Hello, America. Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much. Make sure you follow us. Make sure that you share because we still have a lot of people we got to wake up and we got to keep people engaged. We can't expect Donald Trump to do it by himself. So please do that. Our guest is Colin Plume, the CEO of Noble Gold. And you go, oh, Dave, you've been with Noble Gold for years, 8 and a half to be exact. I have been a customer for 7 and a half. And in fact, Colin and I were just talking about something else that I'm contemplating doing here very, very quickly, either be this afternoon or tomorrow. And I'll tell you can't go wrong, folks. The dollar's in big trouble, and this is why Donald Trump is looking to do basket currencies to back up the dollar. And it's coming. I've been given a date. I don't know if it's true. I was told a year from this July 4th. I don't know if that's true. But what I do know is true is Trump is moving in that direction and he needs to. Absolutely. Colin, welcome to the show, my friend. Thank you
Thanks,
so
Dave.
much for coming on. And I wanted to talk about silver because that's where my intentions lie as a customer of Noble Gold. And you've written a book. In fact, I see it there on your right-hand side next to your plant. Silver is the new oil. And is that ever true? Can we take, before we launch into some things I know we're going to talk about, can we take just a minute and talk about the premise of your book and how it ties into why people should be looking at silver?
Yeah, so I started the outline right at the beginning of the pandemic. I think when I was buying silver 1,000 ounce bars and I was competing with COMEX, literally buying from the same COMEX was competing with me because they need to back their purchases because silver was going crazy in 2020. And I was borrowing money because I had to buy. I tried to buy every ounce of silver available because silver, I don't know if you remember exactly, but silver got down to like $13 during 2020 and it was impossible to buy. And so I bought everything. I pulled money out of my house. I borrowed against my some of my stocks. I did everything. I did everything I could do to buy physical silver and I bought just in a ridiculous amount. And I remember at one point, the guy I was buying all these bars from. Now, 1,000 ounce bars are never 1,000 ounce. They're like, they say they're called 1,000 ounce, but they're never right because it's so heavy. I mean, we're talking about 70, 80 pounds. They're either 950 ounces to 120 ounces, and they're all going to be a little different. And I remember, buying these from multiple places, wholesalers all over different places. And the guy's telling me, he goes, "You're on, I'm talking to you, and I'm talking to the big institution. That's who's buying right now." And I bought everything I could. And then as I'm going through all this, I'm thinking to myself, like, I got to write a story about this because A, like, people think their contracts are backed by silver and they weren't because there wasn't enough. Based on the amount of contracts being purchased, there wasn't enough. And I knew that because I was competing and buying the same silver they were. So I knew there was a story there, and obviously that story actually really came out in the last month or two with the LBMA. I mean, it really proved the fact that there wasn't gold, right? There was supposed to be gold in the LBMA, and they didn't have it. But I started to write the outline for the book then, and then what I really wanted to talk about, the two big themes of the book are the opportunity in silver and all the industrial uses that I go into detail. But then the opportunity is like there's these opportunities in your life, these super cycle, these rare opportunities where you can find something that can take you out of the doldrums of what the government tried to do to people and during the pandemic was beat you down to submission and give you free money. And I just remember talking to people, they were like, "Oh, I'm getting $1,000, a week," or, "I'm getting $1,000 a week to do nothing," and this and that. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this is not helping you. This is and so with my opportunity in silver, what I saw happening behind the scenes, and then this mentality that they were trying to force upon people, I realized that there was an opportunity. And I talk about both. And my book's not just about silver, it's about finding these opportunities in life. And it could be, like you found, your voice and you're out there and you created this business for you and your family. And there's always an opportunity that's outside of the traditional way of doing things that presents an opportunity. And it did for me in many different ways in the precious metals industry, in other industries that I own. And it was really just the idea of like not thinking the same way. And that's really what I get into in the book is, yeah, there is silver. Here's all the uses. This is what I like about it. But also try to think of things in a different way. And there will be a super opportunity in your life that you can take advantage of if you're open to that mindset. And
Yeah.
that's the premise behind the book.
I totally agree with what you're saying. In fact, that leads us into a talking point here. And I'm going to say it this way. I am confident in what I've been told in multiple sources. JP Morgan is the leader in suppressing the price of silver and keeping it down so they can gather it up. And I'm looking here at one of our talking points here, and it talks about silver inflation adjusted price. And comparing to what happened with silver rise in 1980 and 2011, we're not even close to those levels in terms of rise, which would indicate, given the technological demand for silver, that the price is being suppressed. How long do you think the price can be suppressed? I don't think it can happen much longer because of the demand.
Well, we hit a pretty critical point at the price level it's at right now. It's an at an 88 to 1 ratio gold to silver. The historical no norm for gold to silver is about 53 to 1 if you go back the last 100 years. It's even been 16 to 1. 2011 it was 30 to 1. But let's just say it goes back to 53 to 1 ratio gold to silver. That would mean that silver, if gold doesn't move up $1, silver's sitting at $58, $59 today. So I think that there's only so long you can keep it. And listen, they kept the inflationary numbers low to the public for the last 30 years, where they kept telling everybody it was 2%. And then what happened was 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, is that every item was going up at such a rapid rate that guess what? Now inflation's at 9%. Well, it wasn't the first time inflation was at 9% over the last 30 years. It's always been much higher than what's been reported. So I think, silver is a unique metal in that it's been currency. It, was currency and we used it until, the early 70s. It's a part of this solar revolution that's happening, and solar's not going anywhere. And the demand for solar alone, I mean, you're talking about 17, 18% of the silver that's pulled out of the ground every day is used for solar, and they expect that growth to continue and go up 30, 40% over the next 10 or 15 years. So I think it's just all these industrial uses, and if we continue to see that happening, then the price has to go up. There's just no way to look at it. What I think is going to go down, Dave, is if you look at a pie chart of the usage of silver, about 41% is industrial, 17% is jewelry. And then about 16% is coins and bars. I think the coins and bars are going to shrink over the next 10 years because it's so expensive to pull silver out of the ground. I think that the industrial use is going to pick up. So I think when you look at the pie chart uses, is I think jewelry will go up, and I think that industrial uses will go up, but I think the coins and bars will go down. And you're even seeing some of the major mints saying that they're gonna slow down production, because if the demand for silver is going to industrial uses and they're willing to pay more, then they're not gonna send it to a mint. They're gonna send it to a factory that needs it in whatever industry they're gonna need it for. Then you have the US government too. The US government last year bought $430 million in silver, and they only bought $120 million in gold. So it was a 4-to-1 ratio, silver to. So you're seeing that trend with our government buying that much silver for industry, for the government, for military, for all the different uses. So I think if you add all those things in, it presents a pretty interesting story for the price of silver.
So for someone like me, that's a purchase is imminent here in the next 24 hours. What we had talked about before it came on the air, not silver coins, but more like the rounds or the bullion, right?
Yeah, I would do, Every day it changes a little bit, but what we try to do whenever you call that day is see what gets you the best possible, dollar for dollar. And it could be 1 ounce silver rounds or 1 ounce silver bars, or it could be 10 ounce or 100 ounce or maybe a little bit bigger. That's really the way to go. I don't, we don't sell a lot of those 1,000 ounce bars because, they're hard to ship, and it's hard to move a 70-pound bar if you get it delivered to your doorstep. So you want to be a little bit smaller than that. We typically do those big 1,000 ounce bars if somebody wants delivery and they just want the lowest possible price. You can really kind of get some great prices on that. But even kilos or 100 ounce silver bars, those are really desirable right now. Really great pricing. Some of the
Yeah.
lowest pricing relative to silver I've seen. And since I've been in the business for 16 years, I think relatively speaking, the prices are the lowest relative to the spot price of gold and silver.
I agree with, and I've read that too. But you're saying that if you order the best deal you can get on the bullion to move those boxes 70, 80 pounds, that's a moderate deadlift for me. But I understand I've got people in my audience who are elderly and they're not as physically adept as they once were. I get that's a consideration.
It's a good, if you're looking to do some weight training, maybe you put the 80-pound, but no, I mean, we're talking about the difference between a 1,000 ounce bar and like a kilo or a 100 ounce silver bar,
Sure.
negligible in terms of percentage savings there. And obviously for bartering and trading, maybe I would say getting some rounds, some lower price stuff too, because I think we're going to come up to a point here where people are going to want silver. You're going to be able to have some buying power with silver if you want to trade or barter. I have a client that has a mechanic that has been taking silver from him for years and years, and every time he goes in, he just, how many ounces of silver? They do a deal that way, and that's how they've been
Sure,
conducting business for a long time.
Well, one of my takeaways from your book is millionaires and billionaires are going to be created with the rise of silver, which hence the title of the book, Silver is the New Oil. By the way, people can get that at Amazon, can't they?
Amazon, or if they contact us, we can get you a code to buy the book through Amazon.
Okay.
Silveristhenewoil.com also is a website. But if you just call in and you talk to somebody here, they can kind of walk you through, because there's some other stuff that accompanies with the book that, we want to make sure that they get. So.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fantastic. But I'm just looking at the inflation rates here and comparative to silver. It is a great buy. And I know I asked you that loaded question before we came on the air, silver or gold, and you really hesitated. And that was my reason for asking the question, Colin, because they're both really good to get into right now. Absolutely.
And gold, listen, gold is very stable.
Yep.
Gold is the preferred metal of central banks. So it's, and it's exciting. And I will say, the thing about gold, the one reason I paused when you said that is, if they do this audit of Fort Knox, the potential is so high that something is amiss. And I think that could really push the price of gold very quickly if we don't have the amount of ounces, or something's not right. Or let's be honest, if they don't do that audit in the soon, what message are we sending to the people that we don't know if there's any gold there, right? I mean, that's so I think that's the one thing I always hesitate right now, is that when people ask me, obviously I love silver. My wife and I, we just bought some silver for ourselves, and at some point, it's, the big problem with silver is like where you store all the silver. But I think that, and to go into silver, part of the reason, actually, Sharon, my wife, loves silver, and we were looking at just talking about all the industrial uses and everything happening, and the photovoltaic applications has nearly tripled over the last 4 years. It's 143 million ounces. And it's going to keep going up with this, clean energy and solar and everything happening. So I think a lot of times what people don't realize when, they're married and this, is that, your spouse, they may have different reasons for getting into an investment. And the one thing that Sharon and I have always done is we make all of these decisions together. And sometimes she's more aggressive in the precious metals than I am, and sometimes vice versa. But ultimately, every time we've done it, we've been happy about it. We've felt good about it. And you know, the interesting thing about like when you look at like what you own is like when you look at all of your assets and then you factor in debt, but then you have this whole column with no debt behind it. And that's the really exciting thing, I think, for us and also for our kids, is that we're building this really this hoard of gold and silver that has no debt. So whatever happens with all the other stuff, the equities, the real whatever's happening, all that debt stuff that you have, you got this one portion that continues to just go up, and there's no debt behind it. So whatever happens down the road, they're going to have access to that. And for my three kids, you know, they love it. You know, we go through once a month. I show them what I've designated for them already. My oldest son always says that he thinks he should have more gold and silver because he's the oldest, which is quite funny to me. And I tell him it's all, we're splitting this pie up three ways. You're getting it all in different ways. So, but that's the one thing is like, you got to think about when you're investing, you got to have some instruments that don't have debt, because the thing is, Dave, what's happening right now, I don't know if you saw this CLO bubble, this viral video that went out there about the CLO bubble that's happening. The collateralized loan obligation bubble that's happening. This woman did this video, went crazy on X, but basically she breaks down that there's $3.8 trillion in CLO debt that's out there.
That's
And
correct.
this is why Joann's went out of business. This is why Red Lobster went out of business. This is why a lot of big corporations have gone out of business. And basically what happens is, to kind of simplify it, is that private equity goes in, and they've gone in over the last 5 to 7 years. They go into a company like Joann's. That's a good business, strong business. I don't know if you saw what happened. They filed for bankruptcy, but 97% of their stores are profitable. The reason they filed for bankruptcy is because private equity went in there, put this debt, CLO debt, which is, this debt is not fixed rate, it's variable rate debt. So they went in and they had this cheap debt at like 0% or 0.5%, pulled a bunch of money out of Joann's. They did it in Red Lobster. They've done it. They've actually, there's charts out there. There's about 100 corporations over the last year that have gone out of business because of the CLO debt. And basically what they've done is they've stripped these companies out, these good American companies, and they've pulled all the money and all the good parts out. And now this debt's coming due. So it was at 0%, 0.5% or 1%, because it was interest only debt. Now it's coming due because it was variable rate debt, and they can't make the payments because now the debt's at 5.5 or 6 or 7%, whatever the bank is
So,
offering to them today. So you're seeing these major corporations that have been stripped by private equity. And this is the next big bubble. And if you see this woman's X post, she talks about it. The CDO bubble in 2008, 2009 was 1.6 trillion. The CLO bubble, Dave, is $3.8 trillion.
right. I think this is what Trump is talking about replacing, though.
Correct.
He said businesses coming back into the country because of the leverages he's putting out there, like with tariffs, is going to total close to $4 trillion. And I think he's seeing that as a replacement for what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, and also what he wants to do, there's a lot of tax advantages for private equity, and he's trying to get rid of those, because what private equity is doing is it's stripping, you know, great American businesses of their value. And they're basically, because, you know, private equity gets all these significant tax advantages over a 10-year period, and they're able to layer in a number of things. And so if you look at the list of these corporations that have gone out of business, like Joann's and Red Lobster and all these, and you're like, how does these guys have been around for, like, what happened? Are they not profitable? They're not running well. Well, Joann's, 97% of their stores are profitable, and they file for bankruptcy. Like, how does that make sense? And really what it comes down to is that you have this private equity where they just go in a little Gordon Gekko style. They go in, they strip things apart, and they put this cheap money on it so they can pull a lot of the good parts of the business out. And you're seeing it happen. And then the trail of this, Dave, the scary part about it is that the CLO, this debt that the private equity is putting on these properties, they're not keeping it. They're going ahead and selling that debt to big pensions here in the US. So the
Oh.
truckers unions, And all of these unions are buying this CLO debt. So what's going to happen is exactly what happened in 2008, where like the home buyer got screwed and the government came in and bailed out the banks. And, the banks basically got all these houses at no money down. Well, now what's happening with the CLO bubble is you're having average American working at Joann's, losing their job, right? Then let's say their husband is a trucker and has a pension. Well, his pension actually owns part of Joann's too, owns the debt. So the American middle class that still has a pension and still has these are losing jobs, and then they're just packaging this BS over into the pension fund. So these pension funds have bought trillions of dollars of this really bad debt. And so this is the next bubble that's going to hit. It's the CLO bubble. Quite scary situation.
Hey, I got to go back though, because I want to clear something up for the audience's sake. Mine too, really. Okay, so you got Joann's and these other major corporations that are going out of business with their association with CLO. Are they buying into this debt as an investment? Are they borrowing from it? What's the deal?
Yeah, so what private equity does is they'll go to a company like Joann's. They'll go to the top brass at Joann's and go, "We're going to come in, buy you guys out, and we're going to pay you for your business, but we'll pay you based on a multiple over the next 7 years. So we'll do like 7x what you're making today." And the top brass goes, "Great, sounds good." And they go in and they buy Joann's. But what they do with Joann's is the only way that they can pay this heavy multiple is they're going to have to get a better return than what Joann's was already getting a pretty good return. That's why they bought it. So what they do is they go ahead and change the debt that Joann's has, because Joann's had some debt, but it was fixed rate debt. So they went from debt that was at 3 or 3.5 or 4%. They refinanced that debt with interest only debt at 0 or 0.5%. This is what they did over the last 4 or 5 years. So
Okay.
they put this 0% money on it. They refinance and they pull the money out. So they go, "Okay, Joann's is worth $50 million. We're going to pull out 30 million, right? We're going to pull it out and give it to the private equity investors. They give it to the owners of the business. They pull out all that money, and they're running this business on this cheap debt. But this cheap debt, the arrogance is that they think they're just going to be able to refinance every 3, 5 years with 0% and 0% and 0%. Well, what happens now? The 0%'s gone, right? So that loan comes due that was 0%, and now it's at 5 or 6%. And now Joann's is in trouble because they don't have the money, right? They pulled all the money out, and they've been living on this debt that's unbelievable debt. The other part that's crazy is that they've sold this debt to these pensions. So now pensions think they're buying all this great CLO debt with Joann's and Red Lobster and all these American institutions are buying great, the Container Store. I mean, there's a list, you can look it up. There's 100 big corporations in the last year that private equity has stripped, put this debt on, and now have sold this bag of junk, these bad loans, they've sold them to pensions. And so now you run into a situation where you've stripped the American people of a good business, you stripped them of their job, and now you've sold this loan, this bad loan, to an American who has a pension that's going to be living on this pension. Now the pension's going to have to figure out what to do with all these bad debts. And basically, private equity has been doing this consistently for the last 10 years, but now they got caught holding the bag because rates are higher, right? And so
Exactly.
if 0% was still around, they never would have been got caught. They would have just kept refinancing. But when you have rates 300, 400, 500 basis points higher, there's nothing to do. They can't cover the obligation. Bam, Joann's is out of
Is
business.
BlackRock part of this or State Street or Vanguard?
This is mostly private equity money.
Okay.
BlackRock has some institutions that do this. But what you're going to find is that BlackRock is going to go in and buy Joann's now that they're bankrupt. That's what they're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So they'll buy the name. It's a
Mini-inventory.
good
Yeah.
name. It's good business. 97% of the stores are profitable. So
It's a fire sale.
everybody gets stripped. Like the American people get stripped of that good job, that solid business for the quick buck that was only allowed to happen because private equity came in. They did this unbelievable pro forma and basically stripped all the good parts out of the business, and then sold this bag of junk, this debt, to this other entity, this pension, and the pension doesn't know what they have. This is a massive bubble day. This is the next big thing to happen. I'm lucky I saw this video. I've heard rumblings of this happening, but it just, when you see these companies go out of business, you must think, oh, management's not good, or maybe people aren't buying the product. But then when you dive in, you go, 97% of the stores of Joann's are profitable. Like, well, how do they go out of business? If they're profitable, how does it make sense? And this is what's really, happening out there. It's
But
all.
to pay the return note to senior management, they've got to basically borrow the money to do it.
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly.
And so it becomes like an adjustable rate mortgage for homeowners that
Correct.
traps them in. They bought a house at
Correct.
3% and now it's 8% and they
Correct.
can't make the monthly payment. That's
Right.
effectively what's happened, right?
And that's what happened in 2008 too, right? It's the
Yes.
same idea because a lot of people didn't get fixed rate mortgages, right? They did these adjustable rate mortgages and then they sold them off to different institutions. So this is the next step. So, listen, this is all debt driven. This is all the big problem with our economy. This is all what, President Trump got laid in his lap, and Musk is this massive debt. And so I think what you're looking at today is you see all these this smart money that these corporations that are just really just been living on cheap debt. And now we have to retrain how we do businesses. We retrain how we do things in this country. And I think we need to get away from private equity. I think we need to really just focus on good corporations. You don't really need private equity the way you used to. 30, 40 years ago, when private equity came out, they came with creative ideas. They restructured things. They did things in a unique way. They brought outside money in. You really don't need it tomorrow, today. What's happening now is those institutions are stripping great companies apart. President Trump is trying to close some of the tax loopholes that private equity gets that'll make it very difficult for them to survive. We'll see if he can get that passed through Congress. Obviously, there's a lot that has to happen there.
That's right.
But these are things that people should be looking out for. So you have the CLO debt, and then it's like the global financial debt, right? I mean, we're all built on this, debt to GDP ratio. What are we at in this country? 130%
Something like that. Yeah, it's like 130 to one. Yep.
So these are all the things. So I think it's safe to say, Dave, that, people that understand sound money realize that there is times that you can use that. There's ways to use it. But then, you look at guys like, Dave Ramsey and some of these guys that say no debt. And when you see all these things happen, corporations going out, it kind of makes sense. Like maybe you need a balance of a little bit of both, where you need some debt, but then you also need some assets that are debt free and that are not owned by anybody else. And that's the beauty behind gold, silver. You own it by yourself. It's yours. There's no middleman. And I think that's why a lot of people are gravitating towards this investment right now.
This is the former teacher in me that wants to sum this up, but what I'm seeing is, and it's hard not to see intentionality here, because they know the people doing this, the private equity groups know what they're doing. They know what the
Oh, yeah.
result's going to be. They know what's going to happen to people's pensions. I mean, this is inexcusable, and it's deliberate, and they're profiting from participating in the demise of the United States economic system. And then let me flip over to Trump for a second. Okay, as we just said, he says he's bringing in $4 trillion of new business to the American economy. He sees that as an offset, but it's not an offset to the pension situation.
Right.
That's very serious. So he needs to come up with an answer for that. And now I see why everyone's thinking he's got to go to basket currencies to save the dollar, because if you raise the level of the dollar, that debt is not as big.
Right. Yeah,
So
no, you got to
how am I
strengthen.
doing on the summary there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You got to strengthen the dollar. You got to make our, it's been a sliding scale, right? Part of the reason that central banks have been buying so much gold is because they've been selling their treasury bonds, their US treasuries, right? That's a big part of it, is that one of the assets they would hold would be US treasuries, and they've been selling and selling. He wants to make it that our debt is desirable again, that countries will say, they want to have our debt again. They feel more comfortable. They want to use our currency more. We've created this slide down where the whole world has been saying, like, you guys are out of control spenders. You're bloated. Your debt to GDP ratio doesn't make sense. Why would I keep your debt? Why would I want to hold on to that debt? So what he's attempting to do is to make our currency strong. That's why he's come out in such a bold way to do a lot of these things. And it's a high growth strategy, and I think it will work over time. But you're going to have some pain in the short term to fix a lot of the things that he's had to get. I mean, he inherited a Biden recession. Let's be honest. I mean, there's no way to look at it. From the Inflation Reduction Act, which is a joke, to paying off college kids' tuition, to all the government jobs that he continued to keep on the books. I mean, never making any significant cuts to the government. Now we're coming in and saying, okay, this is unsustainable, 1.4 trillion in interest. What are we going to do? But he inherited all this from the past administration. I mean, he's only been in office, what, for 100 days? So he's unfortunately going to have to unwind a pretty bad situation. And it's not unlike any new CEO coming into a corporation. He's going to have to fix the mess that he inherited.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. I'm just wondering how bad it's going to get. I have a solution in my mind I'm going to offer here in a second, but I wonder if we're going to reach 1929 levels and how long it'll last. The people I talk to economically, 6 months and more like 2008 and not 1929. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, 1929 was I think a unique time in history in that we didn't have the potential that we have today. We have unbelievable potential in this country. We have unbelievable demand for people. I mean, that gold card that he offered, the demand is through the roof. If this was 1929, no one's going to pay $5 million to move here. So I think that, the fact that people are willing to spend that money to move here, and they want that idea that they could become in this country, it shows that we're not in a depressionary era. Now, I do think that people are going to have to adjust the way that they think, and they have to look for, you need these big opportunities of these bottoming out to build the wealth. And so whatever you think is your best potential, besides what you're going to do with your investments,
You
there
go.
has to be other ways that you're going to create some wealth, whether it's, a side gig or building an extra job or whatever it is, or doing some stuff on the side. You have to have some money now to invest because the opportunities are going to be fantastic. What happens when you go through a recession right now, or when you have consumer sentiment right now, is that people get tight. That's the worst. The time now to get your money to work, to invest, is right now. That's the thing, is you have to go sort of opposite. And if you look back at all these time periods, you look at 2008 and you look at 2001, and if you look at 1994 and you look at 1987, everybody that dumped money in on investments that they believed in, they went up 10, 20, 30, 40 times, right? So if you don't have the money, you need to find it. And if you have some money, you need to think about what you want to do. But the worst thing you can do is get tight in a situation like this, because these are the opportunity periods that you
Well, this is
have.
going to take down banks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this is, and I don't mean two banks that have already failed. I mean, and whether there are 66 on the watch list, a couple of people I talk to say it should be closer to about 1,600 on the watch list and
Right.
growing. And you're right. I mean, you're nailing it. Why I'm calling Noble Gold. I'll just say the number 877-646-5347. And the reason I am, people, is because you need to sit out the hurricane that's coming economically. And you need to be able to be somewhere else other than the crash. And the crash is going to hit your bank. And I know I'm a broken record, Colin, but doggone it, if I'm not right, the Dodd-Frank Law 2010 says they can tie your money up forever in the bank. Okay. And that means retirement associated with it. They can take it because you're in second place now because of Dodd-Frank. And people just don't understand it. Look the law up. Dodd-Frank 2010, anything you have in the bank could be gone. Now,
Right.
I think what's more likely is we'll probably get a percentage of what we had in the bank. I mean, what do you think? Total.
Well, and also the Dodd-Frank was supposed to protect us against these kind of collateralized loans that are out
Exactly.
there. That's another part of that Dodd-Frank, is that we're supposed to have fair lending, and we're supposed to have regulatory bodies watching these loans. And like I said earlier, I mean, these pensions got sold, these collateralized loan obligations, these CLOs, and they're going to start uncovering that these businesses don't have the underlying resources to continue to pay the debt. And so the Dodd-Frank was supposed to protect people from that. But that's the thing is that if you see it on every level from 2008 collapse, the CDO collapse, and to today, you can see that the big corporations are the only ones that survive every scenario. In 2008, basically everyone that owned these homes lost them. They went to the banks, the government bailed out the banks, the banks held these assets, which were good assets, and then they waited a few years and they sold them and they made a massive fortune. I mean, the amount, can you imagine today if the banks, if someone came to you and go, "Hey, we'll give you the money. You can buy every house on your block and we'll give you a loan for the next 10 years at below market. And you don't have to sell them. You don't have to do anything. Just hold these for us." Can you imagine what the amount of wealth you would have if you had that deal, right? And that's what the banks got. Now they're getting the same deal, right? Private equity made out like a bandit. The pensions are going to lose all their money. Everyone that worked at Joann's is going to go out of business. And then BlackRock's going to come in and buy the name Joann's. It's going to happen. I guarantee it'll happen in the next 60 days. Maybe they've already bought it. We don't even know about it. And they're going to recoup it and they'll build that business back up. They've already stripped out stuff that they don't need. And so this is what ends up happening. But at the end of the day, all of these instruments, the way that they're setting them up, they are pulling money and wealth away from us. And that's the beauty behind what we do is you take a little bit of the chips off the table out of the bank and get it back with you. And I think that's the beauty behind precious metals in today's environment where everything is built on leverage and debt that doesn't help the average, American.
No, it helps the government keep spending and the banks that collateralize
Correct.
it. I mean, that's who it's, you're right. It kills the individual, and people just don't get it. The dollar is not going to hold its value until it's backed by a basket of currencies, and there's going to be heck to pay as you move into this arena. I mean, some people say 6 months, some people say 2 years. I don't know, Colin, the amount of time. I just know this. You can't buy too much gold and silver today
No.
because your dollar is soon going to be worthless.
Yeah,
And it's just,
absolutely. Unfortunately, yeah. But he will fix it. Trump will fix it. He knows what he's doing. He'll fix it eventually. It just won't happen right away, unfortunately. It never, you can't, this is like a ocean liner, right? I mean, you can't fix the trajectory quickly. So he's doing the right things. It'll eventually get fixed, but I think that for people that are looking to protect themselves in the short term, I think you're going to do well in metals. And I think that this is going to be a fascinating and unbelievable year in terms of what's happening out there. And I hope that, part of me hopes that everything I'm saying is wrong, right? Part of me
It's not.
hopes that
It's
this
not.
happens
It's not.
and everything's fine and we fix ourselves. But I think being measured and understanding the facts and looking at the numbers, these are very, very likely scenarios for
No,
us.
you're right, and I want to ask a departing question here. So people say, okay, Dave, I get it. The dollar is in trouble, and I can see what Trump's doing, and I see the problem. Okay, so I buy all this gold and silver. How do I liquefy it so I can use it to live? What would
Yeah.
your answer be to that?
Yeah. I mean, we buy back everything that you bought from us at any time. We can get the funds back to you within a day or two. We have clients that are retiring that need the funds. Buyback is a big part of why people choose us because we focus on bullion coins and bars. We'll give you an amazing buyback. But listen, if you moved anywhere in the world and you took what you bought from us, they will buy these products anywhere. Anywhere in the world, they will buy these products. I can promise you that. I've been all over the world. I've taken gold and silver all over the world. They want it. They're interested in it. There's no place that you can't liquidate your metals, unlike the dollar, right? The dollar's not wanted or needed everywhere in the world. So it's a universal language that people understand that gold and silver are desired and wanted. Some places they want it more than anything else. I mean, India and China are good examples. They're fascinated. They continue and they tell their people to buy gold. And people in India, poor families pool money together to buy 2, 3 grams of gold or 1 gram of gold. That's how important it is. And 1 gram of gold is basically the size of my fingernail. So it's important anywhere in the world, and they can liquidate anywhere. And we're happy to liquidate for anyone that needs the funds. And then it's a big part of what we do.
I got to ask a question for my own curiosity. You mentioned Japan, and the Japanese basically moved away from world reserve currency status with the dollar, and it's sending shockwaves to the stock market and so forth. And Japan knows what's coming with our dollar, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've
That's
had a
why we
very
have.
interesting economy themselves, where they had, historically pretty low inflation and starting to pick up here. And, very similar to us. I mean, they're a big consumer, right? They buy a
Exactly.
lot of goods, and they're seeing the repercussions of that. The repercussions of our 1980s strategy of buying everything overseas because it's cheaper is now it's starting to unfold that it worked for and it made a lot of wealth for a significant amount of time, but to build a strong middle class, it's not the best strategy.
No, I hear exactly what you're saying. Well, we've covered a lot of territory today, and what I hope that none of you do out there is that you panic. Look at it like a physics problem, right? Nothing ever dies, it just changes energy form.
Correct.
And the dollar is not going to die. It'll come back. It'll be like a little zombie. It'll come back. It'll be stronger than ever. But right now, it's going to change energy for value into gold and silver. And that's where you need to be, people, I'm telling you. This is what I concluded about a week ago. And then when that X article and video came out, Colin, I just said, man, my instincts are right on the money. I got to get out as much of the dollars I own as possible.
Yeah.
But when I have a deal come in, I've said this on my show. Let's say I close a deal somewhere, I'm taking 80, 90% of it, and I'm not going to the bank with it.
Yeah.
And that's just what people need to do. And I need to leave enough, though, so I can still operate in society.
Sure.
But it's going to be. I mean, do you think we'll see unemployment rates of 20%, or will it go that high?
I think we're gonna hit like high fours this year, because it takes a few quarters, but I mean, with all these government jobs that we're looking at,
That's
I
right.
think it's definitely the numbers that I could see pretty easily if you factor in all the government jobs. And if they can get other employment in different places, I think a lot of those people may just circumvent and just try to start a business, which may be better for them. That might end up in the end being better. I wouldn't be surprised in the next year or two, we could see high 5, 6%
Okay, so
unemployment.
nothing like 1929. Okay,
No,
that's
I don't think. I think there's enough with enough of the manufacturing coming back, and I think that everything takes a minute, but I think that the idea that some of these goods we're buying overseas are going to be much more expensive, whereas someone locally is going to they're going to figure it out and go, I can
bingo.
make this here, and someone's going to buy it, and we're going to go back to buying American is going to be cool again, and I think that's really important. And I think as more of that happens, people will say, okay, I want to buy American-made products, and that will increase, and that'll help our unemployment numbers. But
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, just government jobs alone will probably get unemployment into the high fours this year, because a lot of those jobs are going to the wayside.
That's true. I just want to say this before we close. Okay, do what I'm doing, right? 877-646-5347. If you want more info, you can go to DaveHodgesGold.com, put your email in, and I'll send you electronic printout. But you're not going to get any more detail on what you got today. This was pretty detailed. And I'm warning you. If you don't make the move, you're going to be crying in your milk. That's if you can afford to buy it. 877-646-5347. It's where you need to go. It's what I'm doing. And listen, I want all of you to be prosperous because we need to be standing on our feet in solid ground when the midterms come around. And we got to get out there and we got to make sure Donald Trump has control of the House and Senate. At least MAGA does. Hey, Colin, really interesting stuff. And thank you for breaking this down into understandable terms for everybody. And look forward to having you back on again in the future.
Thanks, Dave. Talk to you soon. Have a good day.
You too.
Hey,
Hey, everybody. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Really good to be with you. We'd ask that you would sign up, follow us, become a subscriber, share our work. We need to wake up an entire nation still. Well, let's put it this way. I would say 50% of the people know what's going on. 20% are active. We got to really increase those numbers because the midterm's going to be here before you know it. And if we lose the midterm, we'll lose everything. They won't need activist judges. So please do that. We have a tremendous sponsor for you. And people often ask me, Dave, you talk about the Metasomer gel. You said you've rubbed it on your joints. And you've talked about the Nanosoma spray. And you go, yeah. And you talk about the skin cream briefly, say it really helps erase fine lines and wrinkles and so forth. That's true. That's true. Let me show you exactly what I'm talking about here. And now they have a special with a starter pack. These are three Nanosoma liquid sprays that comes with the starter pack. Okay. Here's the Nanosoma gel that I rub on joints and I'm doing things in the weight room I haven't done in years where I had bone on bone on my right knee. It works. And then, of course, here's the vanity product. 15% off for these three great products here. You're not going to get a better deal. I recommend you go to IWantMyHealthBack.com/Dave Hodges. IWantMyHealthBack.com/Dave Hodges. Wouldn't you agree that when you have a crime scene, particularly one as important as the assassination of a president, don't you think you would be able to show in your documents you've held for over 60 years? Don't you think the CIA release files would address crime scene preservation? Well, they didn't. I'm going to show you what Roger Stone noticed, and then I'm going to tell you what my experience was. This is one of my two original, well, maybe three original contributions to the Kennedy assassination research. Undisputed. Immediately after JFK was murdered, his limousine was flown to D.C. and stored in the White House garage. That's true. They brought in some mechanics from Detroit to work on this. That's true. Instead of being preserved as a crime scene, the limo was thoroughly cleaned, the interior was reupholstered, effectively destroying evidence. Now, let me share with you some of the evidence that could have been in the limousine. Bullet tracing patterns based on fragmentation distribution. Also, too, what you would have seen was the caliber of the bullet being fired. Did it match Oswald's Italian Carcanian, Mannlicher Carcanian rifle? I suspect not, since you had multiple shooters. In fact, even the CIA files now are clearly alluding to the fact there were two shooters. The idea of a single lone assassin, not accurate in the CIA's eyes. So you could have told, been told, you could have told from, gun fragment residue, bullets taken from the bodies too. Oh, no such thing was done. Okay. Now I know a little bit about this, and we're going to talk about crime scene preservation here. I was actually lecturing, and one of my classes went and attended this as a field trip. And one of my students actually spoke up when I talked about this, and he said, this was back in the early 90s. Kind of my heyday of JFK presentations. And he said, well, my great uncle actually was brought in to work on this. And they said they dressed him up in airplane mechanic suits. They searched him coming in. They searched him going out. They signed a non-disclosure agreement. They scared the living hockey sticks out of him. I said, interesting. I said, let's talk when we're back on our campus. And we did. And he told me, he said, I've talked to my uncle. He would talk to you. But he won't go any further. And I said, would he talk to Jim Mars? And he said, probably not. But I said, I told him he could trust you. So we had a conversation. And he told me that we took bullet fragments out of the grill in front. I said, how many? He goes, two. And he said, one out of the side panel on the right side of the car. And I said, so what did you conclude? I said, he was shot at from the front and from the right front as well. And I said, interesting. And he said, we replaced the grill. We did more than what Roger Stone is saying here. This is what he told me. And I said, would you be willing to do something anonymously on tape where we disguise the voice? He goes, look, Dave, there's only so many of us that did this work. It wouldn't take long for them to track us down. And he says, I know how many bodies followed the Kennedy assassination, starting with Lee Oswald. And I said, so you know a lot about it. He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, and I'm familiar with your work and Jim Marr's work. So that lead stopped there. But the limousine that you see in the National Archives now that they claim is Kennedy's, that's not even close. They changed everything out. Okay, now one more thing about crime scene preservation, and this is not in dispute. There's some pretty good evidence that Kennedy's head exploded. 25% of his cerebellum was gone. That's according to the Parkland doctors that the Warren Commission never saw fit to interview. Isn't that interesting? The very doctors that worked on Kennedy when he first came in, not one of them was interviewed. So Dr. McClellan has gone on the record for his death, and he said, I'm just telling you right now, the man was shot, okay? From the right front, back into the left, went his head, and he goes 25% of his cerebellum was blown out. And he says, I'm telling you, my experience as a doctor that did this work in emergency room settings and handled multiple gunshots, he was shot with a frangible bullet, in other words, a dum-dum or an exploding bullet. And he goes, that's the only thing that would explain the massive evulsed hole. He goes, you would expect it a bigger hole than the entrance. Entrance wound small, exit wound bigger. But he said his exit wound was huge. And then later, Steve Revelle interviewed a guy named Michel Nicolais, pen name, out of South America, who was involved in paying off the assassin teams and converting the original heroin into dollars. And he was asked by Revelle, tell us, and they blacked out stuff and used the fake name. And he said, he was shot with a exploding bullet. He said, you really can't understand the wounds unless you understand the kind of bullet. Now, let's talk about crime scene preservation related to those reported events from Revelle and others. Did you know that when you do a gunshot autopsy, you soak the brain in formaldehyde to harden it so you can trace bullets, pick out, fragments so you can tell caliber of gun, type of gun, direction of shot? Well, remember, this was the time when they're trying to say three shots fired from behind. This is why they had to say the back of the head was the exit wound, because Oswald would have been behind and up on the book depository sixth floor, not in the grassy knoll, not on the bridge in front. And that presented a problem for the Warren Commission. So they had to say three shots from behind and they had to lose the brain. They lost the brain. And they brought in two people to do the autopsy who had never done an autopsy before, Pitzer and Humes. They never did an autopsy, ever. Gunshot autopsy? No. For the president of the United States, wouldn't you bring in your most experienced people from Walter Reed, those used to dealing with combat injuries that would know exactly what to do? Exactly. And by the way, these people that supposedly did the autopsy burned their notes, and the brain disappeared, and there's no dispute about that. Oliver Stone first talked about that because Jim Mars gave him that information, and where's the brain? How do you lose the brain in the most important assassination? The most important murder of the 20th century. But that happened. Crime scene preservation. Now, all of the files have not been released. They're kind of like time tagging them to send them out. It's very possible these things will be addressed by the CIA when they put them out. And I may have to come on here and do a mea culpa and say, well, they did deal with it, and here was their explanation, and it seems reasonable. But right now, as the facts line up, there were serious crime scene compromises that altered the outcome of the original report in the Warren Commission. Just a fact, folks. I'm not here to make anything up. I'm not here to boast a conspiracy theory, except I'm telling you, these are unresolved issues. Unless the CIA comes out with more documents and there are soon to be more release, and they tell us more about this event. Pretty interesting, isn't it? I'm Dave Hodges. Sign up for our newsletter at thecommonsenseshow.com, and you click the newsletter link, put in your email address, and you'll get one-stop shopping to everything we do in the previous 24 hours. People love it. Over 50,000 people are doing this because it's convenient. You'll love it too. Make sure you do it. And check us out at thecommonsenseshow.tv for the very best in investigative reporting, as well as our mystery show. Oh, yeah, we got mysteries of the mind, histories, mysteries. We've got a lot of stuff that we're revealing. It's fun, it's interesting, and some of it is, let's say, world paradigm view changing. People love it. We'll see you over there at thecommonsenseshow.tv. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you back here again.